All right. I'm going to present a bit of a historical review on soil conservation. And it really sort of revolves around this strange period of time in the early 1900s when soil conservation was essentially neglected by the Bureau of Soils on there. And actually both Ed and I had sort of were talking one day, and both of us sort of had this idea, well, what was going on at that time and what were the opportunities? Okay. So when we think of soil conservation, obviously one of the first things that probably comes to mind are the crusades of Hugh Hammond Bennett, okay? The dramatic photos of the Dust Bowl, okay? And Bennett's crusade against soil erosion that took place. Now, much of the language and the attitude in Bennett's writing and his speeches was very, very similar to the early conservation movement. And it's pretty easy to sort of conjoin these together, that they were sort of happening at the same time. At the same time that Theodore Roosevelt was talking, we were talking about soil conservation. But this is really happening 30 years later that we get into soil conservation. So the question that Ed and I had was, well, why wasn't it done? Well, and what opportunities were there to address soil conservation? And we want to focus on the Bureau of Soils. This was the federal agency that should have been the voice for soil conservation at this time, and yet during this period really neglected and mentioned rarely any negative impacts of soil erosion. Okay. Two of the leading voices in conservation, Theodore Roosevelt and Gifford Pinchot, also, okay, and as we talk about soil conservation, we say the Bureau of Soils didn't talk about it. Well, virtually no one was really talking about it or championing it or being the voice of it. Now, Roosevelt and Pinchot would be the voices for many things. Here they are pictured along the Mississippi River before the announcement of really a national referendum on conservation. Okay? And yet these two men, with the extensive erosion of the Mississippi near Memphis, Tennessee, were literally face to face with this. But it wasn't a priority or a concern for them. Okay? And it wasn't that erosion wasn't widespread. Okay? Go to Wisconsin, to Mississippi, to Georgia. Okay, the photos of erosion are dramatic, and they in themselves are calls to action. That this resource is literally running off the landscape, and that we should be doing something about it. Okay, the first opportunity for the Bureau of Soils came in the same year it was formed. Okay. Assistant Secretary of Agriculture Charles Dabney saw that erosion was a serious problem. Okay. He put together experts from a number of different bureaus within the Department of Agriculture and put together this Washed Soils Bulletin. Okay. How to prevent erosion, how to reclaim lands. Many techniques and practices were outlined in this, although they were just with sort of pen and ink drawings. Okay. Now, this should have been a tremendous opportunity for the Bureau. The first year of the Bureau of Soils, it had 5 employees. Okay? And here they had kind of ready-made pet project of the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture to run with. Okay? But the Bureau was led by Milton Whitney. Okay? And Whitney was confrontational. He was controversial. Okay? For our purposes, let's just say erosion wasn't a priority for him. Okay? So Dabney retires or leaves the USDA in 1897, and Whitney goes on to his own priorities. One of these priorities was the National Cooperative Soil Survey. And this provides another opportunity for the Bureau. Because with the Cooperative Soil Survey, the Bureau is sending its in-house trained experts, okay, to observe soils around the country. Now, there weren't soils programs at that time. If you wanted to learn about soils, you went to the Bureau of Soils. You were trained there and then sent out to do largely the soil surveys, because it was kind of immediately successful as a program. Okay. A person on the right here is J. Bonsteel. Okay. And in 1901, Bonsteel was sent to Yazoo County, Mississippi, okay, to do the first of the soil surveys in these loess soils, these highly erodible silt soils. Okay. In his report, obviously, and pretty much all photos of soil erosion are dramatic and calls to action sort of in and of themselves, okay, but the captions are equally so. Okay. The soil seems to melt away, even in moderate rainfalls, okay, gentle slopes, impossible to prevent even with ordinary cultivated crops. You know, this is an acknowledgement that something's wrong in this landscape and that conservation, okay, is needed. Okay. After 1901, okay, the photos disappear from the soil survey reports. Okay. Discussions of erosion become rather matter-of-fact or academic. Okay. They aren't the calls to action. They aren't the acknowledgement that there's something wrong here. It's just mentioned as, well, these are, you know, these soils will show some severe erosion, and then you move on to the next topic. Okay. Whitney was one of the main reason for this. Okay. Whitney was developing at this time what he would call his modern concept of the soil. Okay. It was his grand vision of what soil science was to be. Okay. And Whitney's vision and Whitney's priorities, make no mistake, were those of the Bureau at that time. Okay, he held tight control over what the Bureau did and essentially how it thought. Okay. By 1909, okay, Whitney would offer a statement that is really remarkable, okay, in terms of its bluntness, in terms of it being really out of tune, if you will, with the time. Soil being the one indestructible, immutable asset, okay, one resource that can't be exhausted, can't be used up. Okay. Well, the whole conservation philosophy is based on the acknowledgement that, you know, so that resources are limited, that we do need to use them wisely, okay, and it's up to us to kind of repair the damage we have or to use them wisely. Okay. With Whitney's philosophy, there's no reason to address soil erosion whatsoever. It's not a problem, okay, because these soils are inexhaustible. Okay. So, continuing opportunities, but Whitney's philosophy isn't going to let these in the door. Okay. Now, in 1907, the Bureau gets a tremendous opportunity. W.J. McGee is hired, okay, as the expert in charge of soil erosion investigations. Okay. Now, McGee is one of the top conservation thinkers in the United States at the time. Okay. He's been called the leading theorist of the progressive conservation movement, the brains behind it, the chief strategist behind it. Okay. In one fell swoop, the Bureau has the opportunity to say, yeah, we haven't done anything for 13 years, okay, but we just hired somebody who's tops in conservation here. We can be on top of the. We can be on top of this in no time at all. Okay. McGee wasn't a dilettante. He was well suited for that position. He had been with the U.S. Geologic Survey in the 1890s. Okay, as this photo shows, he had traveled in these counties in western Mississippi, near Wazoo or Yazoo County, in there with these loess soils. He had seen the soil erosion and written passionately about it in the reports, that this was really had a destructive effect on the landscape. So McGee hits the ground running. Okay? He's hired in 1907. By May of 1908, he has a draft together of a soil erosion bulletin. Okay? But things hadn't changed in the Bureau. Okay? Despite Whitney's flowery language when he hired McGee, okay, his interest wasn't there, and this was going to get put on a back burner. Okay? It wouldn't be 1911 till this is published. Okay? And McGee's position, okay, has changed, okay, from being expert in charge of soil erosion. Now we see, pardon the pun, an erosion in his position titles. Okay? Now he's expert in charge of soil water investigations, and soon he'd just be an expert in the soil survey. Okay? So he was being marginalized, pushed off to the side. Okay. So we still have this bulletin. Okay? Well, frankly, reading the bulletin, it's a disappointment. And you read about McGee, he's this brilliant thinker, he's the shining light of the conservation movement, but it's poorly written. It rambles, it's full of jargon. Okay? Half of it is photos. Okay? Obviously, the photos themselves are calls to action, but there are no calls to action within the document itself. Interestingly, some of the photos, such as the smaller one, were taken by Whitney. He had seen this soil erosion. Okay? So it's just so strange that he would see the disappearance of these landscapes and not be moved and continue with his viewpoint that, well, there's nothing wrong here. The soil's inexhaustible. How can you say soil's inexhaustible when you see these sorts of photos? Okay. In addition to being difficult to read, okay, it's quite uneven in terms of how things are described. We said that in the soil survey reports, oftentimes that erosion was referred to in a very academic way. And this is sort of an example of one. So in one, you'll have complete destruction of a landscape by erosion. And then the next photo, okay, well, you show forms of autogenic sculpture produced by retrogressive erosion, extending to base level. That's what's happening there, but that, you know, you can fall asleep reading those sorts of things. So McGee's report was pretty much forgotten. Probably really rarely cited. Okay, it shows up in some bibliographies of soil erosion. So when you get these exhaustive everything that was ever written on soil erosion, well, it shows up there. But in terms of being a document that was used, it wasn't. Okay, part of the reason is it's difficult to read. The other reason is that, well, it wasn't until 1911 that it was published, and at that time the conservation moment had largely passed. Okay. William Howard Taft was in office. His priorities were much different than Roosevelt's. He had very different view. He thought Roosevelt had gone way too far towards conservation. Okay. He had a very different view of presidential powers. Okay. He had fired Gifford Pinchot for insubordination, which he was. But generally the view of the time was that conservation was backsliding. Okay. Yet within this document, McGee pulls out, his reputation was as an expansive thinker, a person who saw relationships. And he pulls out a couple of very interesting points in it that we want to make. In an unusually concise sentence that McGee has, he talks about each field having its own coefficient or measure of erosivity, okay, depending on soil type, texture, depth of humus, capacity for soil fluid and slope of surface. This is interesting because it's a model. Okay? McGee is proposing a model for soil erosion. At this time, this is not how erosion was talked about. Erosion was talked about in tons of sediment per second coming out of the Mississippi River. It was talked about tons of soil that were lost on a field. Okay? But McGee is proposing we can look at these soil characteristics and we can model this soil erosion. Okay? Now, it wouldn't be till 1959 that the Universal Soil Loss Equation is published. But McGee sees these relationships, okay, sort of intuitively almost. Now, McGee had a reputation as being able to see relationships that others couldn't. Okay? And our second opportunity in here, he really makes a tremendous intuitive leap or intellectual leap, and he draws back from his old mentor, John Wesley Powell, who in 1878 had put together a report on the lands of the arid region. Now, Powell also is probably the most intuitive natural resource observer of his time. Okay? And what Powell said in this report, essentially, we'll boil it down, is that water is a community resource. Okay? It's contained within a watershed. Okay? And that watershed community should be the ones that make that decision as to how that water is used. Now, this is totally at odds with the laissez-faire capitalist system at the time, that, well, you get what you can and take things out. Okay. Powell's view of the West, this is what the Western states would look like in Powell's view. They'd be arranged by watersheds, and those communities would be making those decisions. Now, McGee takes this and he turns it on its head. He says that, well, soil is also a community resource. Okay? Soil is also contained in a watershed, and it should be the people in those watersheds that make the decision as to how that soil is being used. Because soil moves from one point to another in that watershed, but it's contained in there. And this is more than just a historical kind of curiosity, because in 1933 we had the establishment of the nation's first watershed project just a bit east of here in the Coon Creek watershed. And again, I haven't seen any reference to McGee in this. So ultimately the Bureau of Soils had continuous opportunities to address soil erosion, and is really the philosophy, if you will, of their chief that kept this from being considered until after his death in 1927. Thank you.